You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework. Here's your host, DevOps Institute CEO, Jane Grohl.
Hi, everyone. It's Jane Grohl, and welcome to another episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm very excited today to be joined by Peter Madison of Zodiac, and we're going to talk a bit about migration to the cloud, some of the different definitions around that. We're going to talk about security in relation to that topic, talk about some automated governance, and we'll see where our conversation goes. So, hi, Peter. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hi, Jane, and thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here. So I'm Peter Madison. I'm a coach and a consultant out of Toronto, Canada. I work within the DevOps space, primarily helping organizations adopt and change practices and build high-performance teams. A lot of the work that I do is in that organizational change space. I've been in the industry for 20, 25 years. My background is primarily coming out of the infrastructure and operations space. I have a lot of experience in banking and finance and brokerage, as well as in the loyalty marketing space. And in my career, I've done everything from being an individual contributor as a system admin and DBA all the way through being an engineering manager and a director and moving data centers and all sorts of fun things, including setting up and running cloud migrations, which is the topic we're going to talk about today.
Thank you. You know, you mentioned expertise in organizational change management, and I think this year has really been pivotal in organizations kind of examining, showcasing, and realizing their ability to change their organizations. We're going to talk a little bit about from a technical perspective, but certainly we're going to zero in a little bit on the human side as well. So let's talk about 2020. I know people are really tired of hearing the words unprecedented, unchartered, and you know, there's a lot of truth in that. But here we are kind of facing the end of the year. And we know that there's a couple of messages that have come out of 2020, particularly as it relates to DevOps, automation, and the human side of it, not the least of which is cloud. So before we started recording, Peter, you said to me, well, there's so many different definitions of cloud migration. So maybe kick us off. What are the different definitions of cloud migration in your view?
So when we look at the different workloads that we have residing in our data centers or that we have that we use to deliver value for our organizations, those different workloads have different requirements and need to be run in different ways. And as we look to migrating out into the cloud, it's as much a case of saying, well, where's the most appropriate place for this to go? And if I'm looking at something that's not core to my business, I can say, okay, I'm not going to let somebody else manage this entirely. If I'm looking at something like a productivity suite, is there really a need for me to be running my own email servers? And maybe there are reasons. But for the most part, maybe I can just give that to a provider who's running a SaaS service, a software as a service, that they can look after that for me. And I can trust them to manage all of the data, look after the delivery of that service and provide it to me in that manner. I can start look at other forms in terms of like a platform as a service. If I look at the different versions of that out there where I can take my workload and I can have somebody provide the bulk of the infrastructure around that. And then I can look at the more generalized workloads in infrastructure as a service and other manners of different cloud, as well as running some of these capabilities myself on-premise if I'm going to run a platform internally and have my own private cloud, and at which point I can start to look at hybrid cloud models between my on-premise and workloads in the cloud and really understanding what workload belongs where.
Yeah, what I really find fascinating about that is that what you're sharing with the audience, I think this is really significant, is that it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not migration of the cloud is you know, it's not like lemmings to the sea, right, where we all line up and we jump off the cliff. There's lots of different ways to optimize the cloud capabilities. And also, depending on the nature of your organization or the vertical market that an organization is in, how they choose to optimize cloud resources may be a little bit different, particularly as it relates to, say, security considerations, governance considerations, and such. Why not talk a little bit about that? What could be an influence in terms of organizations really trying to strategize how they optimize some of these cloud resources?
So there's a lot of different parts to that we can start to consider as we decide, where should I put this workload? Where should it belong? One part of it is this critical to me doing business? Is this something I want to learn and innovate from? Something that I really want to have much greater control around? If it is, then maybe I want to find a way of running this that allows me to do that. If it is something that I don't want that control, like productivity, if I like email or being able to store documents, and maybe I just take advantage of using a cloud service to do that instead. If I'm looking at specific governance requirements around, I need this data to reside in a particular location, or I need to be able to ensure that it doesn't leave a particular location. And there are incidences here where we have to be careful around things like that, because what the cloud provider might say is happening may not actually be what's happening. And we need to be able to really understand in great detail where different pieces of data are being sent to. And then we need to look at as well, what skills do our people have? How close are they to different ways of working? Do I need to bring in people who have a different sets of skills? Do I need to upskill the people that I have and give them the opportunity to learn and develop and start to work within these? Because if I start to bring in lots and lots of different types of services from lots of different places, I now need to think about, where is all of my data? How do I manage all of those different services? How do I ensure that things that I really do care about, that is critical to me, doesn't end up in the hands of people I don't want it to?
Well, and I'm glad you brought up skills, because the human element of everything we do in DevOps is sometimes overshadowed by the belief that technology will provide all of the answers. And as you know, Peter, and I think the audience is becoming aware of, DevOps Institute, you know, fields annual community research project on upskilling. And last year, CI/CD toolchains and cloud took the top two in terms of technical skills. So the transformation is not only digital, the transformation is human. And there's a big organizational change management focus that has to include upskilling programs, has to include really helping a new culture that is comfortable, that's secure, that is elastic, right? But then also grows the individual as much as perhaps they grow the elasticity, I can't even say that, of the cloud migration. So talk a little bit about organizational change and skills growth. How does a migration to the cloud, in whatever perspective or at whatever use an organization might take advantage of, how does that affect the culture or the human side of the enterprise?
Well, the adoption of cloud enables a lot of capabilities for the organization that it didn't have before, when they were running inside of more traditional and types of infrastructure on-premise. And it gives them the ability to start to change the dialogue in the way that they engage across the organization. This is why the adoption of a cloud type methods are so much more powerful. One of the biggest things that it can enable you to overcome, and we can talk about why organizations sometimes fail to really gain this benefit. But one of the biggest benefits is now that I can make the access to the IT resources more self-service, more available on demand, versus having to send in a ticket to a group and then wait. And it's that wait state that we see so often when we start to map out how organizations work, that that cloud enables us to overcome, that that's where we can start to talk about that human interaction, where we can now start to have conversations about what is the actual problem we're trying to solve, rather than relying on another group to have having gone and solved it and then send them a ticket. So there's some really fundamental behavioral pieces that come out of something as simple as that interaction, because we're changing the dialogue from one where we believe that this group over here has already solved this problem for us, which also creates a passing the buck type model where we've just said, hey, we are going to rely on them having done it. Then if something goes wrong on my side, it's not my fault, it's theirs. So I'm going to pass this over. And instead of coming together to have a dialogue which about how we might possibly use these capabilities that we've enabled, because these capabilities we've enabled are now ones that we can all start to use and understand. And cloud can really enable that to happen.
So what about organizations that are concerned about security and the cloud? I know that one of the topics that you speak frequently about is security and automated governance. What should they be concerned about? What should they be aware of? What should they not be concerned about when looking at either a cloud environment or hybrid environment?
So one of the common things that it's very well talked about, but it often gets overlooked, is the shared security model that most of the major cloud vendors have. This understanding of who is responsible for what. So as you start to map how we did things before into how we will secure things in the cloud, we need to understand that the models and the ways we had of working don't translate one-to-one into what we're doing in the cloud. We've got to really carefully think about what are we doing to manage and secure workloads in the cloud versus on-premise. And I've seen organizations where they've had that same security group or people from the existing security group suddenly become the cloud security group. And as an example, their solution was to create a spreadsheet which had hundreds of items in which, in order to put a workload into cloud, you had to go through and tick off what you were going to do, which is crazy, because it's, you know, the instant you even get to consume the resources, anything was in that spreadsheet would be irrelevant. But so bringing them to the table and getting them to understand that, well, then that's not how we're going to secure workloads in the cloud. We need to have something that's more dynamic, that's automated and in line with how we deploy those workloads. We also are going to have workloads that are going to be much more ephemeral in nature. You can't rely on this idea that we used to have in the more traditional models, where it's a static workload that's going to sit there and we can come back and we can look at it again in a year and it's effectively going to look the same. This is something that may only exist for minutes or even seconds. So if you're going to secure this, we have to secure the system and the process that does the deployment, that manages the deployment and all of the surrounding pieces that allow access into that particular service. So there's a lot of talk as well at the moment about how do we secure the pipelines that do the delivery of the code into the services as well, and making sure that every aspect of the pipeline is secure. And that's something that I talk about in talks I do at conferences and things.
What's really, I think, interesting, as you mentioned, you come from an ops background, and so do I. And with DevOps, we're looking to shift left. And so as we're talking about cloud, as we're talking about organizational change, as we're talking about security and the rise of, say, DevSecOps, the developer has a new part in this play, really, right? They have a lot more responsibility to be comfortable with infrastructure, to be comfortable with security, to be comfortable with testing. So how does this approach, how does the approach of really looking at your cloud strategy, whether you're at the early stages of it, midway through, or even more mature, what's the influence of and on the developer?
So developers are having to take a lot more on, in theory, within this within these models. There's also a reality that if we if you read through a lot of the things that are in the press out there, this idea that the developer now has to be this unicorn who has ultimate knowledge of absolutely everything in the entire enterprise and all of the skill sets to go along with it, which is somewhat unrealistic in that to even find the person who is this this polyglot of every programming language who has deep operational knowledge, analytical abilities, and all of these other pieces, there are some people who are very good across many, many areas and are very, very skilled, but there's very few who could, you could arguably say that, and that could do all of these things. So really the way I look at this is we work together to create pieces within the platforms, within the system. And there's a quote I usually use for this around, we fall back to the strength of our systems. This idea that we need to build up the systems so we can reduce the cognitive load within the teams so that the systems are starting to take care of the delivery processes so the developers can focus on the actual development of value inside of the system. Now, there are lots of things we need to do to ensure that we're not having a platform that's providing services that the developers then have to wait for changes to the platform. So there's pieces there that we need to ensure that we're building this collaboratively with them and that they have access to be able to make the changes they need so they can continue to evolve. But it becomes a partnership between development and operations and security in all of the areas of the organization to work on delivering that value through the system.
And, you know, we talk a lot now about hybrid product teams. We talk about hybrid humans, because I agree with you on the, you know, the mythical unicorn that's affectionately called a full stack developer, full stack engineer. They are rarely seen in the wild. But again, the ability for humans to become more hybrid, particularly developers, right? And I think there are a lot of tools that are being made available to them to lighten the load. But certainly that shift left could increase the knowledge requirements that they have, whether it's broad or deep. So, Peter, we're going to run out of time, but I would be remiss if I didn't end today by talking about predictions, right? So none of us have a crystal ball. You know, we keep talking about coming out of, well, we're moving into 2021, but not 100% sure what we're coming out of or what we're coming into. But I think this year, the challenges of managing an on-prem environment, even physically having, you know, people that can go to your data center to manage it, probably has sparked some interest or at least some review from CIOs and CTOs in terms of what should they consider for next year, in terms of, was this something that pushed us forward into the cloud, maybe to organizations that wouldn't? So let's talk a little bit about predictions. What do you predict in terms of cloud adoption, whether it's hybrid adoption, full on moving to the cloud, or somewhere in between for the large, complex organization? Do you see more migration to the cloud, if not in full or in part? Do you see, you know, kind of that same steady movement to the cloud? What do you think based on what you see?
I'm definitely seeing that there's a drive to more stuff into the cloud. And I know that clients I'm working with are actively looking at reducing footprint in any private data centers they have or eliminating them entirely if they possibly can. There is this idea that not everything fits well in a cloud model. And if you have legacy type workloads that you don't want to invest in the migration of them, or even just running them as static workloads up in cloud, those types of workloads really don't work well. And lifting and shifting them from on-premise into the cloud is probably going to cause you more pain and heartache than it's worth. So although it's possible to do it, it's definitely going to cause some kinds of either stability or cost issues or all sorts of other problems that come up with that. So there is a need to have somewhere to run that. So I can see taking those sorts of workloads and running them either in third-tier cloud or in co-hosting facilities and having your on-premise workload, sort of on-premise private clouds to help manage these types of workloads so that you can keep them running, because they're often the sort of the workhorses that are running some of the backend systems as we start to reduce these private data centers, which is it's a continuation of the trends that we've seen over the last decade or two. And it's really what I do expect to see is that, and we have seen, I would say, in the last 6 months, is a massive uptick in the migration of those services which truly aren't valuable to the organization, things like your email services and your productivity services, those kind of things, call center services, a lot of these other pieces, like how do I get them out of my on-premise data centers? And the so that the only things that I might want to keep in my on-premise data centers are those business critical legacy applications that I know aren't going to run nicely in the cloud, but which I might have to re-architect in order to do so. So I'm going to have to keep them somewhere for some, the time being.
I think, you know, it'll be interesting as we kind of move further and further out of this very strange year into 2021. You know, I like to say that as horrible as the COVID situation has been around the world, in some ways, it's forced us into the future, particularly as far as technology goes. And that is, as I always want to call out the tech community for really being unsung heroes of this pandemic. Peter, thank you. Again, I appreciate you spending time with me, particularly appreciate your DevOps Institute ambassador. And I know that you've been helping us out with a lot of things. I hope you'll come back and we can look at the predictions for 2021 a little bit more closely as the year starts to unfold. So for those of you listening, you know, we talked a little bit about skills and I really want to call out the fact that DevOps Institute's upskilling enterprise DevOps skill survey is open for 2021. This data is so important. I mean, we've been doing this project for a couple of years now. This data, when we look at 2019 to 2020, we expect that there's going to be a shift. And as Peter has said, you know, everyone is kind of looking at their strategy from both an individual level to a corporate level. And of course, understanding which skills are important are there. So if you're listening, please go up to DevOps Institute's website, take a few minutes, fill out the survey. You might win a Nintendo Switch, but don't make that your motivation. Make it the fact that this data is important to all of the humans of DevOps. And then I want to wrap up by sharing that the week of December 7th, DevOps Institute is hosting a festival. We're going to do Global Skill Up Fest. It's a whole week of activities, starting with a career fair, moving into a couple of days known as Get Skilled Up, and culminating with an 18-hour global skill up event. So stay tuned, pay attention to our social, go up to our website, and you can learn more about our festival and all of the activities that will be available through that. Peter, thank you. Again, your insight is so important. I think being able to bring that kind of knowledge and experience to our humans, but also to the enterprises that the humans work for is very, very valuable.
Well, thank you for having me, Jane. I enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. All right. So again, this is Jane Grohl with Peter Madison, and you are listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast. Stay well, stay connected. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.